The following audio is brought to you by Summerside Community Church in London, Ontario. For more information on Summerside, visit us online at www.summersidechurch.ca.
Well, after all the excitement last Sunday, we're picking up again with the series that we started 2 weeks ago on finding Christmas beyond the manger. We normally think about Christmas from the manger scene with the characters surrounding that, with Mary, Joseph, the baby, the shepherds, the wise men, the angels, and of course the animals, right? You have to include the animals because what's Christmas without animals? And there's nothing wrong with the manger scene. I mean, we have one in our house and you probably do in yours too. And the manger scene's great. But we need to understand that the story of Christmas, in a sense, is sort of just a summary of the whole story of the Bible. Because the story of the Bible is all about God coming to earth to rescue people that are in a desperate condition. And the story of Christmas just gives us that moment when Christ entered into the world and to begin the work that he did. But all of the Bible is related to this. And the point of Christmas is not to make you nostalgic about all things Christmassy and Hallmark-ish. It's about focusing in on the fact that God has come to earth to rescue sinners. And it's to focus on what God has done. So it isn't surprising that we find glimpses of Christmas throughout the whole Bible. And we saw that 2 weeks ago. We looked at the birth of Moses, which clearly has connections with the birth of Christ and some fascinating things there. Today I want to take you to the feast of Hanukkah. Now right off, some of you are thinking, didn't Pastor Leo just last week say that it's all about Jesus? And now you're taking us to a Jewish feast? Like what's with that? Well, the last place you would expect to find Jesus is in a Jewish feast, right? Well, actually, it shouldn't surprise you too much because Hanukkah is something that Jesus celebrated. Do you realize that? Jesus celebrated Hanukkah. We say, well, didn't he celebrate all the Jewish feasts? Well, when you think about it, the Jewish feast of Hanukkah was not even mentioned in the Old Testament, and yet Jesus celebrated it. In John chapter 10, verses 22 to 23, we read, "Then came the festival of dedication at Jerusalem. It was winter, and Jesus was in the temple courts, walking in Solomon's colonnade." Now here we have Jesus in the temple courts at the festival of dedication, and if you look at the footnote in your Bible with that festival of dedication, it will indicate that this is the feast of Hanukkah that the Jews celebrate today. When you stop and think about the implications of this, I find this fascinating. Because here Jesus is celebrating the feast of Hanukkah, which is not mentioned anywhere else in the Bible. This is the only place you're going to find it in the Bible. Which means it wasn't in the Old Testament. It wasn't one of the feasts that the Israelites were commanded to celebrate. And yet Jesus is here in the temple, clearly celebrating the Feast of Hanukkah at the temple. Now, why that's significant is that there are some people, even there's a church even here in town, and probably a couple of them, that have decided that Christmas is not in the Bible, therefore we do not celebrate Christmas. The Bible never tells us to celebrate Christmas, to make a big deal of it, so we don't do that. And they do the same thing with Easter, because it's not something commanded to celebrate with, you know, the way we do with the Good Friday and Easter Sunday. So they just choose not to do that. And that's fine, but I find that it's interesting that Jesus is celebrating something that the Bible doesn't even mention. So just a side note there for your own benefit. And Hanukkah doesn't start until 160 years before Jesus was even born, which meant then that the Old Testament was completed. The Old Testament was ended. So here you have Jesus celebrating this festival. And I know that some people that don't celebrate Christmas because of all of the commercialism and because it's, you know, become all about presents and food and everything. And so they say, well, they're missing Jesus, so we don't even celebrate. That's fine. If you want to do that, just don't expect that from everybody and demand that from everyone else. Now, Hanukkah is always celebrated in November or December, so many people think of it as a Jewish Christmas because they exchange gifts, and so it almost looks like this is the Jewish celebration of Christmas, although they don't celebrate the birth of Christ. The reason why the Jewish calendar changes all the time, like every year it's a little bit different, is because the Jewish calendar follows the lunar calendar. The cycles of the moon, the lunar calendar. So you've got two different kinds of calendars. One's following the cycles of the moon, and the months and the dates are in sequence with that. Our calendar follows the solar calendar, the cycles of the sun. And so we need to have a leap year to catch up, you know, to make up for things that don't quite line up. Well, in the lunar calendar, they have a leap year, which they have to add a month, not just the day, because the months are shorter, and it's complicated. But that's why you have the Jewish festivals changing. But Hanukkah always appears from November to December, sometime in that time period. And there is a maximum, a minimum date in which it shows up. So Hanukkah began this past Thursday, and December the 7th in the evening, and it ends on Friday the 15th. Next year, interesting, it starts on Christmas Day. The evening of Christmas Day will be the beginning of Hanukkah. And Hanukkah's been in the news lately because, you know, some cities are refusing to celebrate Hanukkah, and, you know, because of the war going on. And so it's become a political thing too. Now, another important thing to note about Jesus celebrating Hanukkah is that in the New Testament, when you read about Jesus, we find that the New Testament writers understood that the Old Testament feasts that the Jews were to celebrate were fulfilled in Jesus. And Jesus fulfills the purpose, the meaning of these Old Testament feasts. The most the clearest example is in Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7, where Paul directly connects Jesus with the feast of the Passover and the feast of the unleavened bread. In 1 Corinthians 5, verse 7, Paul says, "Get rid of the old yeast so that you may be a new unleavened batch," connecting it to the feast of the unleavened bread, "as you really are, for Christ, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed." Clearly, Paul was looking back at the Passover feast where every year they would sacrifice the lamb, which was a remembrance of what happened that first Passover when the people were in Egypt, and they went through the Exodus coming out of Egypt, and God told them to eat the lamb, and then they were going to celebrate the feast and then be released. Paul says, Jesus is our Passover lamb. He has fulfilled the purpose of that feast, and he is obviously a connection with that. So every year when people celebrate the Passover lamb, it's a reminder of that sin has been paid for by a sacrifice, and they could be set free. And Paul says, our sacrifice has been paid once for all through the death of Jesus. He is our lamb, and it's done. So if Jesus saw his life as the fulfillment of these Old Testament feasts, what did the festival of Hanukkah mean for him? This isn't a feast that was in the Old Testament. And we aren't told directly what Jesus thought about it, but when we understand what Hanukkah is all about, and we understand what John is saying in this gospel surrounding this, we get some clear indication of what Jesus thought about the Feast of Hanukkah and how he was related to it. So let me give you the story of Hanukkah, the background of the Feast of Hanukkah so that you understand it, and then to understand how Jesus sees himself connecting with that. Now, to understand Hanukkah, we need to go back to that 400-year period between the Old and the New Testament. When the Bible was written, we have the Old Testament that was written first. It was written in Hebrew, and then there was a 400-year gap in history between the Old Testament and the beginning when we have the Gospels, the story of Jesus. Now, do you ever wonder why the Old Testament was in Hebrew and the New Testament was in Greek? Interesting question. Have you ever thought about that question? Why do we have two different languages that the Bible is written in? Well, to understand that, you have to remember that about 50 years after the close of the Old Testament, there was a man by the name of Alexander who was born. Alexander was quite a keener, okay, to say the least. I mean, in his 20s, when he, you know, when most kids were in their parents' basement playing video games, wanting to conquer the world, you know, playing Age of Empires, Alexander was actually out conquering the world, making his own empire, okay? I mean, Alexander in his 20s was out, and by the time he got to be 30th, and there's a map here, by the time he got to his 30s, he had conquered a huge swath of the known world at that time. And he's known as Alexander the Great. He redrew the whole map of the world. As a result of that, Alexander, one of his goals was to spread the Greek culture and language across the globe, right? Across the known world at that time. That's why he just kept going and conquering. So by the time he was 30, he had done quite a bit. But when Alexander died at age 32, I mean, he did this before he was, now some of you feeling like, man, I feel like I'm missing something here, because look what he did in 32 years. But by the time he died, after he died, this kingdom split into four different kingdoms. His four generals then took over four different regions that he had taken in his kingdom. And they ended up being their own kingdoms. And as you can well imagine, these four generals sort of took on Alexander's attitude and said, I want to conquer more. And so they were fighting against one another too. The Seleucid kingdom was covering the land of Judea, or the land of Israel as we know it today. That was the area that was under the Seleucid reign. And about 150 years after Alexander died, one of the kings of this kingdom, the Seleucid kingdom, was Antiochus IV. He was ruling over the Seleucid Empire, which included Judea, and he called himself Antiochus Epiphanes. Epiphany, some of you may recognize that term. That's the Orthodox Church celebrates Epiphany. When the, supposedly in January the 5th, I think it is, when the wise men came to visit Jesus. The word epiphany is the appearance, the sense of revelation, and it was used as a term of deity. So Antiochus was basically saying, I am God. Antiochus Epiphanes, I am the manifestation of God. That was his attitude. And Antiochus IV Epiphanes, at one point decided, you know, he wanted the Greek religion to spread over his kingdom. And so at one point he went down to Egypt. He was at war with the king down in Egypt. And on his way back, he stops in at Jerusalem and decides, I need to teach these Jews a lesson. And so he goes into the temple in Jerusalem, and he decides he's going to teach them how to give up their old religion and start worshiping the famous Greek gods, because they're the only ones that have any power. So he started sacrificing to Zeus at the temple, and he sacrificed a pig. Now, for those of you that know the Old Testament and are familiar with, maybe you got Jewish friends, they don't eat pork, because that was in the commandments that in the Old Testament for the Jewish people. They couldn't eat pork, and they were the worst thing you could do in a sacrifice, instead of sacrificing a sheep, was to sacrifice a pig on the altar. It defiled the altar. It was a horrible thing to do. So Antiochus IV Epiphanes comes in. He sacrifices a pig on the altar, defiles the altar, tells them to worship Zeus. Not only that, he goes outside of Jerusalem starts going into the towns outside of Jerusalem, setting up altars to Zeus, sacrificing pigs there. But he didn't count on the fact that there was an old priest by the name of Mattathias just outside of Jerusalem that would resist this attempt to worship, to give up the worship of the true and the living God. So he started a rebellion, and he was quite old, and he died within a year. But he had five sons, and one of the sons became well-known Judas Maccabeus. And Judas Maccabeus led a revolt against Antiochus, and he ended up spending several years leading people to fight against Antiochus, and eventually he reconquered Jerusalem and the temple. You can read about it in the books of 1st and 2nd Maccabees. That's where the name Maccabees, in the Catholic Bible, they have the apocryphal books. The apocryphal books have the 1st and 2nd Maccabees, and it tells the story about Judas Maccabeus and what he did. So what Judas did was he was successful in gaining control of Jerusalem and the temple exactly 3 years to the day after the pig was sacrificed, and after Antiochus Epiphanes took over the temple. Judas Maccabeus, 3 years later, conquered it and was able to cleanse the temple. And when he did that, he rededicated the temple and reinstituted proper sacrifices. And as a result, that became the beginning of the Feast of Hanukkah, or the Feast of Dedication, also known as the Feast of Dedication, because it was the dedication of the temple. Now, we know about the background of Hanukkah from the books of Maccabees, but it's interesting to note that these books say nothing about the lighting of lights and using the nine candlelight, the menorah, which we have a picture here. Now, the menorah, this is different than the candelabra that was in the temple or the tabernacle. The one in the temple or the tabernacle had seven candles on it. This menorah has nine, because there were 8 days that it took for the temple to be cleansed and for the sacrifices to be reinstituted. But the first time that we hear about Hanukkah associated with lights doesn't show up in history until 30 years after Jesus. Like, so this 160 years where they were celebrating, we don't know exactly what they were doing to celebrate it. But the Jewish historian by the name of Josephus talks about the celebration of Hanukkah as, he even calls it the celebration of lights, the Feast of Lights. And he explains that Judas Maccabeus, when he went to the temple, he found one little vial of oil to light the lights, and he put that oil, it was the sacred oil that was, you know, set apart for this. He put that oil into the lamps, and that oil miraculously lasted for 8 days. And so that story became one that gets repeated every year. Now, it's an interesting story, but nobody ever claims it's true. Like, everybody knows it's a nice story and it probably didn't happen, but it explains why they would do these lights. But where did the idea of lights come from? There's an interesting Jewish historian that, in his book, The Jewish Festivals, and he's not a believer, he's a Jew, he says the very fact that legends were created in an effort to connect the festival of Hanukkah with the lights arouses suspicion. Had this connection existed from the beginning, from the time that Hanukkah became a festival, there would have been no need to invent tales about them. All these facts call for explanations, and in accordance with what we know of the customs, there can be but one explanation: that the Hanukkah lights originally had nothing to do with Hanukkah. So he concludes, why the Hanukkah lights began to play an important role in the generation before the destruction of the Second Temple, which is the time of Jesus, why the lights became important, we cannot be sure. He's saying, we don't know. We don't know where the idea of using the lights and this candelabra as Hanukkah, where that came from. So there's no clear historical records indicating where this all started and how it became associated with Hanukkah. But let me take you to the Gospel of John to see an interesting connection between lights, Hanukkah, and Jesus. Now, next week, Pastor Luke is going to take us to John chapter 1 and give us John's story of Christmas, because John tells the story of Christmas without even mentioning the angels and the babies he mentions the baby, but without mentioning some of the details that we normally think of, you know, around the manger scene. But let's look at the Gospel of John and notice something fascinating. Because in John, the theme of light is a huge theme. John chapter 1 verse 4, the word light appears 25 times in the book of John. And in John chapter 1 verse 4, it says, "In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind." So right from the start, in John chapter 1, John is saying, "In him was life, and that life was the light for everybody." So here John uses this theme of light throughout his book. In John 3:19, just a few verses after the famous John 3:16, "For God so loved the world," we have John 3:19. "This is the verdict, that light has come into the world, but people loved darkness instead of the light because their deeds were evil." So John is telling us Jesus is the light who has come into the world. By the time we get to the middle of the book, the theme becomes prominent. In John chapter 8, in verse 12, we read, "When Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, 'I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life.'" And of course, the Pharisees challenging him, they say, "Who are you to make those kind of claims?" But then you get to chapter 9, and there's this long miracle account, probably, and I'm not sure, it could be one of the longest ones ever in the Gospels, where John spends a long time talking about this miracle of Jesus giving sight to the blind. Sight to the blind is like giving light where there is darkness. And so right in chapter 8, after talking about Jesus, after Jesus makes this incredible statement, "I am the light of the world," then in chapter 9, what happens? He heals a man who is born blind. In chapter 9, when the disciples see this man who has been born blind, they're saying, they ask Jesus, say, "Why is this man blind? Why was he born blind? Did his parents do something evil that caused this? Or did he do something evil that caused this?" And Jesus says, "No, it's not about his past. This happened so that the glory of God can be displayed." And the rest of the chapter, and even into chapter 10, this whole miracle works out about Jesus healing this man. And he after healing them, he has a confrontation with the Pharisees. So he heals this man. The Pharisees see this man. They can't argue with the fact that he was blind but now can see. But they say, "Jesus can't be from God because he heals on the Sabbath." It's like they totally ignore the fact that Jesus did this amazing miracle, and they blame him for doing it on the Sabbath, because you can't do anything like that on the Sabbath. He must be evil. It's like let's not talk about the real facts. Let's talk about something. Let's distract people by talking about the Sabbath. But when Jesus responds, the Pharisees call his parents, and they say to his parents, is confirming, "Was this man really born blind? Or I mean, was this guy really blind? Is this really a miracle that happened?" And the parents confirm that, yeah, he was born blind. And they can't explain why. And they're actually a little afraid, because the Pharisees are quite powerful, right? So they don't want to upset the Pharisees. So they just say, "Hey, I don't know what's going on here. I can't explain what happened." But yes, they confirm he was born blind, but they can't explain why. You get to verse 24 of John chapter 9, and the Pharisees again tell the healed man, "Tell us what happened. We know this man is a sinner. This man who supposedly healed you, he's a sinner. Tell us what happened." And the man says, I love the way he states this. Man says, "I don't know if he's a sinner or not. All I know, I was blind, but now I see." It's like, what can you say? It's like, here's evidence. I see now, like I've never seen before. In verse 26, they insist, "Why did he do it to you? How did he open your eyes?" And the man is getting frustrated, and he ends up mocking them, saying, "Why? Do you want to be one of his followers too?" And of course, that just drives them nuts. And down in verse 35, so I mean, this just goes on and on about this confrontation with the Pharisees and Jesus and this man being receiving sight. And then in verse 35, Jesus meets up with this man again later. And he realizes that this man's been going through a lot of hassles with what's happened. And he finds the man, And Jesus explains to this man, helping him understand who Jesus is and how this man needs to trust Jesus as the one who can not just open his eyes, but the one who can give him life. And then Jesus uses the example of this man's healing to explain that they need to realize that Jesus came into the world to give sight to the blind, which from everything else that he's been saying, it's another way of saying to bring light to the darkness. And not just physical light, physical sight, but spiritual sight, so that they could see the truth and respond to it. And then in chapter 10, it doesn't end. John is still telling. In chapter 10, Jesus is talking to the Pharisees, which he was talking to just before. And if you ignore the chapter division, because there weren't any divisions in the original, it continues on. And he has the long statement about Jesus being the good shepherd. The famous statement, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. And he sort of warns them about being false shepherds. And so that you have this whole section. And then when you get to verse 19, after the long section about Jesus as the good shepherd, we get to verse 19, and that's, and the Jews who heard these words were again divided. Many of them said, he is demon possessed and raving mad. Why listen to him? But others said, these are not the sayings of a man possessed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? So here we have this long section about Jesus being the light of the world. And then he demonstrates it by giving sight to the blind, demonstrating that he's the one that can bring light where there's darkness. And then he's confronted by these Pharisees and the people are saying, what's going on? And the next thing we read in verse 22, then came the festival of dedication at Jerusalem. It was winter and Jesus was in the temple courts walking in Solomon's colonnade. So the question that we would want to ask at this point is, were the lights of Hanukkah, did they understand the significance of the lights of Hanukkah, or was that something that happened later? Because there are two options. One option is that if the lights were a big part, if it was considered a festival of lights when Jesus was there in the temple, what would the people have thought? This guy's the light of the world. He just opened the eyes of the blind. And now look, we're celebrating the light. Whoa, wait a second here. There must be a connection. We don't know at what point the lights became a big deal. But if they were a big deal then, you think the people would have been making the connection. But if they weren't, if it wasn't recognized at this point as a festival of lights, is it possible that Jesus' teaching influenced the first Jewish Christians to understand that this festival of Hanukkah was pointing to Jesus, was all about Jesus, and they celebrated as a festival of lights? Because if you look at the menorah picture again, there's another interesting little fun fact here. The menorah has 9 candles. The middle candle is always a little bit higher and taller. And for those of you kids that are doing the kids crossword puzzle thing, that candle in Hebrew is the Shamash. Yeah, you can find that one. You got that one, okay, Tyler? Okay. That candle, the Hebrew word is the word servant. They called it the servant, and today, it's called the servant. Because that's the candle that they use to light all of the 8 other candles, and every day they light another candle because there are 8 days of Hanukkah. Luke just read the passage from Isaiah, just one of several passages in Isaiah that talks about the servant of the Lord. Who's the servant of the Lord? It's Jesus. It's obviously pointing to Jesus. He is the servant. He's the one who brings light to the darkness. And now we see the servant bringing light, Jesus himself. Now, but that's not all. There's another important connection that Jesus has with Hanukkah. Because the main point of the celebration of Hanukkah was the rededication of the temple. Now here's Jesus walking through the temple at the Feast of Hanukkah, where they're celebrating the dedication of the temple, the restoration of true worship. And the people are looking at the beautiful buildings and thinking about what's going on, not realizing that in their very presence, walking beside them, brushing up against their clothing, is the one who is the true temple. He's the one who has entered into the world as the temple. The one who is the presence of God. The point of the temple was that's where God would meet with his people. And Jesus himself is that temple. He's the one who came as the light of the world. He is the one, Luke's going to talk about this a little bit more next week. In John chapter 1 verse 14, he tabernacled among us. He is the one who became the presence of God on this earth. And the Jews did not see that. In fact, back in John chapter 2, in this same book, in John chapter 2, remember when Jesus cast the people out of the temple because they were the money changers? And Jesus took the whip and forced them out? Just after that, he says in John 2 verse 19, Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple and I will raise it again in 3 days." They replied, "It has taken 46 years to build this temple and you're going to raise it in 3 days?" But the temple he had spoken of was his body. After he was raised from the dead, his disciples recalled what he said. Then they believed the scripture and the words that Jesus had spoken. That means that John, in writing this book, he remembered. He remembered that Jesus was the temple. He remembered the Feast of Dedication was the rededication of the temple. He knew all that. And here he is telling us that Jesus was there and it's all pointing to him. And I know our Jewish friends would probably be upset by me making the statement. But I have to conclude that Hanukkah is all about Jesus. He is the light of the world. He is the one they're celebrating, but they don't see it. He is the servant who brings light to all the other candles. He is the one that he is the true temple that was the presence of God on this earth. You want another fun fact? I mentioned that the temple was dedicated exactly 3 years to the day after it was desecrated and then reconsecrated. You know what day that was? The 25th of Kislev. That's the day it is every year. The 25th of Kislev is when the Hanukkah begins. Because of the Jewish calendar, you know, they follow the solar calendar. So you'd say, what's the parallel for our calendar? Well, it's the 25th of December. And so is it possible? Here's an interesting quote from Alfred Edersheim, who was... he was a Jewish scholar who became a Christian back in the 1800s, and he wrote a number of books. His famous one was The Life and Times of Jesus the Messiah. He also wrote one about the temple. And there's a lot of debate about December 25th, like why. And if you read, you know, you read anything on Wikipedia or anything, you know, people say, oh yeah, we just celebrate Christmas because it was a pagan festival. And that's the only reason why we do it, because the winter solstice. And so that's why it happens. Alfred Edersheim, who wrote in the 1800s in his book about the temple, says the following: the date of the Feast of Dedication, Hanukkah, the 25th of Kislev, seems to have been adopted by the ancient church as the birth of our blessed Lord, Christmas, the dedication of the true temple, which was the body of Jesus. Now, that point is debatable, and it doesn't matter whether that's why they did or not, but it's an interesting connection. Make sure you don't miss the point of what we're finding in John. Because if you keep reading in John's gospel, just a couple of chapters later in John chapter 12, listen to what John said. John records Jesus saying in John 12 verse 35, then Jesus told them, you're going to have the light just a little while longer. Why? Because Jesus was soon going to go to the cross and he was going to die. He says, you're going to have the light a little while longer. Walk while you have the light before darkness overtakes you. Believe in the light while you have the light, so that you may become children of the light. It's like through me, you can have light. You can have life. Your life can be changed. And I'm pointing you to the light right here and right here now. We've seen that Jesus is the one who can open the eyes of the blind, who can give light in where there's darkness, who brings life where there's death. He is the light of the world. And you don't know how long your opportunity is going to last. So believe in the light while you have the light, so that you may become children of the light. I don't know where your heart is at, or maybe what your relationship is with Jesus. But you need to understand that he is the light. If you want to deal with something with the darkness in our world, like, I mean, our world is in a frustrating state. I mean, it's a difficult time we're living through. There have been all kinds of stuff going on, and you say, where's the hope? It's like Jesus is coming to bring light in the darkness. And when you have that light, then you recognize that if the light is shining, if we have life, death can't touch us. We have something that the world doesn't understand. And as you enjoy looking at the lights of Christmas, whether on your Christmas tree or, you know, on the neighborhood, I hope you realize that it's all about Jesus. And I'm not trying to spiritualize Christmas so that it's, you know, to justify decoration. No, but the reason why people celebrate with lights, they don't understand that they're looking for light in darkness. The reason why it feels so good is because it gives them a little bit of hope, but they miss the fact that the hope is found in Christ alone. He is the light. He is the one that wants to give you light. And every time you look at a menorah, every time you see one, don't just think, oh, the Jews are celebrating Hanukkah. Think it's about Jesus. He is the one that we celebrate.